Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chicago's Legal Latte, a series of podcasts brought to you by Lavelle Law Limited. Throughout this series, the attorneys from Lavelle Law will share their answers to questions about a variety of topics for individuals and small businesses. To participate in today's discussion, you can email us at podcast@lavellelaw.com.
And it is a topic today that I think is going to generate a lot of conversation and questions. And I hope we don't generate too many and leave them open-ended. But as we discuss a very important topic, the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act, we're going to rely on the knowledge and assistance of Attorney Brian Massimino of Lavelle Law to kind of guide us through. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Mitchell. Great to have everyone back for another conversation. And Brian, you've written a recent article. We'll talk about that. But first of all, thanks for taking the time to join us on the podcast today.
Pleasure's mine. It's good to be with you again, Jim.
Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act, that's a mouthful. It covers a lot of important territory. Give us just a high level, if you can kind of take us back to when this was first introduced. What was the intent of this act?
Sure, and for shorthand, we call it BIPA, short for Biometric Information Privacy Act. So the act goes back to 2008 when the Illinois legislature enacted it, and it's recently gained a lot more of attention because some of the big-name companies that have run afoul of its obligations. But to answer your question, the purpose behind BIPA is really to protect the biometric information and biometric identifiers of employees and residents of the state of Illinois. And the idea is, well, biometric information and identifiers include things like your fingerprint, facial recognition. You know, as technology evolves and expands and becomes part of every facet of life, these identifiers are more prone to being misused. And that's the concern here, is that this is not like a social security number or an account number that could be changed. These are unique by their very nature, and they cannot be easily changed. And so they sure, as a result, they need extra protection. And that's the idea behind the statute, is to protect this type of information.
So I assume a lot of people enjoy the convenience of logging onto their laptop with a fingerprint, or they're unlocking their phone with, as you say, the facial recognition. But I guess maybe a lot of us don't think about what happens beyond that. So are we to presume then that the providers of services, once we give them that view of us, that they then store that and potentially could use it for something?
That's exactly right. It's what is you, how is that information stored, what efforts are undertaken to protect it, when is it deleted, and with whom is it shared? You know, a lot of times these different types of technology, are that information is then shared with some other vendor who you may never have any, as a consumer, would have no knowledge of. And so that's part of the purpose behind the statute, is to put the obligation on the suppliers of this type of services to be on the forefront of protecting that information. Because once it's misused, once it's out, it's presumed to have caused some kind of damage, because it's just so unique. So that wraps back into the purpose.
Yeah, and you mentioned protecting employees, if I heard you correctly. But I assume it's, you know, employers require this in some cases of employees, but also vendors of different services also required of clients. So is the law trying to make sure that whether you're a user or an employee, that you're provided the same type of protection?
Yeah, that is correct. It doesn't really matter what your role is, if it's your biometric information, if you're an employee in the state of Illinois, or if you're a resident of the state of Illinois, there is some protection afforded to you under the statute.
Now, it's interesting in talking to many of your peers over the years at Lavelle Law on various podcasts, whenever there's a new law introduced, and you reference this act being instituted in 2008, but we often hear that, well, you know, the law may not be clear in all respects, so the courts ultimately are going to decide it. You'll have cases to test various aspects of it, and is that what you're starting to see now with BIPA?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. There's been a number of cases working their way through various state and federal courts, and a lot of cases weren't able to move forward until some of these big threshold issues have been resolved. So I think, if anything, we're going to see more of these cases. They're going to be more frequent. They're going to be bigger cases now that we have more information that's pinned down in some of these recent decisions.
Now you authored, as I mentioned at the beginning of the intro, Brian, a great article that can be found at lavellelaw.com that talks about this and dives into some of the things we'll talk about today. And I encourage people to visit the website and kind of read through that. But in that article, you mentioned three areas that the courts recently have taken to refine and try and address. Can you first of all kind of describe what those three areas are, and then maybe we'll just kind of dig into each one while we've got you here today?
Sure. So the first one is the statute of limitations. That's the deadline by which a party needs to file their lawsuit to address a BIPA violation. The second one I addressed relates to what risks are inherent in simply possessing biometric information. And then the last one is about a very important one regarding insurance coverage for businesses who become defendants in a BIPA case.
And that certainly one I found very interesting, and we'll circle back to that. But let's begin with the statute of limitations in terms of filing lawsuits. And just, I guess, a side question for me, are these lawsuits that you're referring to or that you have seen, are they being filed by individuals, or are there instances in which the state itself is pursuing some recompense in these?
Yeah, so my understanding is that the majority of these cases are intended to be class action cases. So you'll have one, two, or just a handful of individuals filing a lawsuit against a large company like Apple or Facebook, but they intend, and with permission from the court, they can represent an entire class of individuals, for example, all Facebook users in the state of Illinois, or all employees of this particular restaurant during this time period. So typically they're class action cases.
Okay. I diverted us there. Talk to me about statute of limitations and what the courts have decided thus far in regard to that.
Sure. So a recent case in September of 2021, the Court of Appeals for the First District settled, at least for the time being, the issue of what is the applicable statute of limitations for a BIPA claim. The statute, incidentally, is silent. It doesn't address what is the statute of limitations. So the courts have to figure that out, and there's a couple ways they do it. I'll kind of jump to the punchline. The court basically said there's two different statute of limitations, and it depends on the type of BIPA violation the plaintiff is seeking. It's either a 5-year statute of limitations or a 1-year statute of limitations. And it's 1 year if the claim relates to a publication or the dissemination of a biometric information. Otherwise, it'll fall under the state's catch-all 5-year statute of limitations. And that has a lot of permutations for a lot of litigation, a lot of businesses. That's a big issue to be resolved.
Yeah, and again, that's a place where I think your article helps clarify that a little bit. So I'll divert people to that. We're talking to Brian Massimino, by the way, at Lavelle Law, and I reference an article that you can find at lavellelaw.com. You can also get Brian's profile there, learn about his practice, his background, and some of the exceptional ratings he's received in his work. A very thorough and complete outline of his background and some of his articles and things all at lavellelaw.com. So make time to get there. I want to talk a little bit about what I believe was the U.S. District Court in Southern Illinois with the case regarding possession. But in that case, while the court ruled, it was fairly limited in scope in terms of what they ruled on, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah, that's right. So, Jim, the issue of possession is an important one because BIPA has expressly regulates when a business can possess biometric information and what that means. So there's an obligation under the statute for any company that possesses biometric information to have a written policy. The policy has to be made available to the public. There's got to be all kinds of parameters with all the intention going back to the purpose we talked about before is protecting that information. And a case out of the Southern District of Illinois, it's another class action case against Apple, and it relates to Apple's software and the algorithm that they use for facial recognition when someone uses their iPhone or other Apple device to take a picture of somebody. And if I understand it correctly, the algorithm will create on its own a facial recognition of anyone who's photographed using that device. And then there's some sharing of that information between the device and Apple, and the chance for storage of that. So there's the possession component there. So Apple argued, of course, well, you know, we're not in possession of the phones anymore. The consumer has the phone, and they could delete anything at any time that they so choose. But the court really dug into the allegations of the complaint that very in a very detailed fashion spelled out a lot of the nuanced aspects of how that facial recognition technology works, where the data resides. And the court seems satisfied that at this initial stage that the Apple's motion to dismiss would be denied and the case could proceed. So now it goes into a different phase of litigation where parties can engage in discovery, force testimony, obtain documents and things that if the motion was granted, that would not be permissible. So it's it'll be an interesting case to watch. This is by far far from over, but it really highlights the issue of the risk of merely possessing the information. You might not be involved in capturing it, but if you have it somewhere on your servers, you got to be really careful, and that's a potential pitfall and a violation of BIPA.
And I said earlier I'm very intrigued by the question of insurance, and we've only got a minute or so left here, but again, that was another recent case in terms of the role of insurers, and it looks like this is really going to be a very complex one to kind of resolve with the courts, but business owners may not have the protection they think they do, if I'm reading that correctly right now.
Well, I think the holding out of this case by the Illinois Supreme Court in May of 2021 does give some level of comfort, or it should give some level of comfort to business owners that their commercial general liability policy would afford them some protection of a BIPA claim because of the way the court interpreted the mechanism by which the biometric information is shared. The concern is it shared with hundreds and thousands or thousands of other companies or individuals such that there's a publication in the normal sense of the word, or is it just transmitting it to one third-party vendor where that could count as a publication? And the court said that sharing it with one party could count as a publication for insurance coverage. So that is a good thing for business owners who have those policies.
Well, I'm sure a lot of business owners are going to have questions, and I think they may want to follow up with Brian Massimino. Can be reached at 312-332-7555, or, as I said, just visit lavellelaw.com. You can also reach out to him website, get the information there. Brian, thanks for being with us today. Great conversation. Great to have you with us again. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Again, more information on BIPA can be found at lavellelaw.com or by calling Brian 312-332-7555.